Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Yes, if ever there was a story made for this Hour Weekly Now, the good news segment, it's this. Sally Graham's former life as a drug addict, prison inmate, could not be further removed from the life she leads today, bringing hope to others who struggle with life as she once did. Sally's a children and families worker at Prison Fellowship in South Australia. Her story is written in a little book called, appropriately, As Black From White. And Sally joins us in the Open House studio now. Hi, Sally.
How are you, Lee?
Welcome. I'm fine and it's great to see you. Thanks so much for coming in. I'd like to begin where your book begins, with your childhood. How would you describe that kind of childhood?
Probably delightfully normal, actually, in a lot of ways. I had a very divergent upbringing as a kid. We did lots of outdoor stuff and camping and all those sorts of good things. So in a sense, it was perhaps surprising the path that I took later on.
Yeah. A wealthy, happy experience.
Middle class normality, yes.
Not always happy?
Oh, I think within the realms of, normal sort of life, I think, actually, yes. Yeah.
Your parents weren't religious.
No.
But you remember saying your bedtime prayers.
Well, in South Australia, we had Fat Cat, and Fat Cat used to say bedtime prayers at 7:30, which was just the signal for going to bed. And that was my the full scope of my theology and religious instruction at that time.
What a world away from the days we know now.
Yeah.
You then went to art school, grew up, went to art school, and began what you describe as a bohemian kind of existence. Describe what that life was like, where that came from.
I think for me, again, without that foundation, it was really, people ask, why did you? For me, I think really the question was, why wouldn't I? So for me, I really wanted to explore everything, and I certainly was testing the boundaries there. But for me, it was about, that whole artistic lifestyle and just experimentation. And what really started with just what I thought was fun and partying and like I say, stretching those boundaries, but soon pretty well descended into a bit of a muck and a mire, really.
How did that happen for you? Because it's an instructive and salutary tale for people who are young today and going out into that world, and I can take on the world and who cares?
Well, sure, yes. Gosh, Lee, do we remember 17?
Yes, I do.
That invincible 17. And I think, I spend a lot of time now. I speak in prisons, obviously, and schools, and speaking to young children. And, we have the say no to drugs message, which is very good, and I'm not saying otherwise. But I think perhaps on some level, young kids go out and try drugs, and initially they are fun.
Because it starts really simple, doesn't it?
That's right.
Yep.
It's just exactly. One. Just once, and there's no harm in that. Or, the philosophy of what I do in the privacy of my own home doesn't hurt anyone. Well, just once, maybe. Ultimately, it does hurt someone. It hurts you, and it definitely hurts those around you. And it's the hook that does descend and escalate really, really quickly.
How quickly did it turn from something that you thought was fun into that hook?
Well, I never finished my art degree, and I was pretty quickly waitressing in a very seedy bar and introduced to amphetamines and intravenous drugs. So what had begun with a bit of alcohol and marijuana and descended pretty quickly. And then, of course, you begin to sell to pay for the drugs that you're then taking. So that whole lifestyle really began to take over my life and rule me more than I was ruling it.
Did you ever desire something better?
I'd love to say that I did. I really probably always thought that I was a very intelligent and a nice person, and I'd love to say that I did, but I don't know that I felt that I had that real drive and desire. Maybe,
Your waitressing really did introduce you into a whole new dark world, didn't it?
That was certainly a catalyst for me, again, to just experimenting, and I got very quickly into heroin and into that really seedy sort of lifestyle where people are sort of throwing each other's down the stairs in seedy nightclubs and everything that you can imagine. So strippers and all of that sort of stuff, topless waitressing, I don't know.
Yeah. I find it incredible that it was your uncle who introduced you to heroin. And heroin dealing.
Yes, yeah. My uncle was one of the first Westerners to be sentenced to life imprisonment and actually death in Ban Kwan in Thailand, long before Barlow and Chambers. And the strange dynamic there for me, I suppose, as a 17-year-old, seeing his newspaper clippings on the front page of the news back then was almost like a starstruck groupie almost. There was a mystique to that and something quite appealing. Yeah, he's a famous person doing this, counterculture sort of, all of that sort of rebellious stuff. You know.
How old were you at this time when you started not only taking heroin but dealing it?
Oh, 17.
That was when you were 17?
That was when I was 17, yes.
And that became a prison sentence. How did that happen?
It did. Well, fast track, I think probably 10 years. I was a heroin addict and a dealer for nearly 15 years. And in amongst that, yes, I did sell an ounce of heroin to a federal police officer, not my most wisest moment there. And I subsequently went to prison for that.
How long?
I did 16 months in Northfield Women's Prison here in South Australia.
And what was that experience like?
Well, gosh.
Paint that kind of picture for us.
You remember the old TV program Prisoner?
Yeah.
Yeah. I watched that before. It was like my research project, I suppose, before I went in there. But I was looking for the big ironing press, which I was very disappointed that it wasn't there. But it was probably a relatively true account. It's a very... Well, prison is a culture that has its own language, its own rules, its own regulations, and it sets you up really in a sense to learn this new culture that is totally irrelevant to the rest of the world. So you're indoctrinated to something else again that
and
is
often
useless.
Often learn a higher degree of criminality.
Sure.
Teaching new tricks.
Yeah, I was a very hard person when I was in prison, not the delightful person you see before you. Lady,
and you are. And you're now up on our Open House Community Facebook page for people to see.
Oh, lovely.
So you were pretty tough by this time, by the time you got into jail.
Absolutely. Very hard-hearted, very violent and aggressive and foul-mouthed. I used to love to swear. It was... Yeah, so all of that, but very hard-hearted, absolutely, by that point in my mid-20s when I was doing prison.
Now, I remember that this is our good news segment. We're about to get to the good news bit of your story, but again, after your prison sentence, you fell back into the heroin habit again, an abusive husband, and one day you cry out to God.
Mm-hmm.
How come that happened?
I think... coming out of prison, nothing had internally changed for me. Certainly my philosophy on life hadn't changed and my motivation hadn't, except that I didn't want to get caught again. And so I thought that I would sort of tone things down. And so I tried to model what I saw successful people doing, like having children, getting married, and do some of those normal things. But I was still hard and angry, and I was still an addict and an alcoholic. So obviously, as you might well imagine, if you begin to add children into that mix, it just becomes more and more devastating.
Yes.
My husband also had his issues, as you can imagine, and we were just a really toxic mix. And it did descend to the point where I remember being in just stuck in this abusive, controlling marriage to the degree that I thought that the only way out was to commit murder.
And kill him,
yes. So I actually devised a plan of premeditated murder. He was passed out on the lounge room floor one day, and I thought that I would just get a pillow and smother him. And my rationale, I think, was just that no one would really care whether, if an old drug addict in Adelaide died. And two things occurred to me at that point in time. One was that I thought that was perhaps a rather drastic solution to my problem.
Glad you thought that.
Yeah. But probably more realistically was just I thought that if he came to, he'd be really, really cross. And so I cried out to God. And it wasn't eloquent or respectful in any way, but I said, if there's a God, you better do something, or tomorrow he gets it. So that was sort of my first prayer, apart from my Humphrey Bear prayers. And the following day, God answered me.
How did he answer you?
The next day, I decided I was still on this plan, and I thought that I would go out and I'd buy enough heroin to just slip in his drink. And again, thinking that that would be a solution and a way out. And I had to stop at a petrol station on the way, and there was a car broken down on the other side of the road. And I saw a person there who I knew from the drug scene, but I thought, oh, I didn't have time to go and speak to them. But I felt a drawing sensation, you know, we would call that in our spirit now. Mm. And so I went over to say hello, and I hadn't seen them for years. I knew nothing about my situation. So when I said, have you been? And he said, I've been good. I've been going to church. You should come. And so for me, really, at that point in time, that was the most tangible manifestation of God really knocking me off my horse.
And what timing?
Yes, absolutely.
On the day you're thinking of killing your husband.
Absolutely. So for me, that was the turning point, and there was no going back. And so I went to church that Sunday, and after having first gone home to my husband, imagine this, I suppose, for all the men out there, and saying, honey, you know, today I was going to kill you, but this has happened, and I've been invited to church. And he came the following week as well, and we were both baptized. We heard the good news of Jesus Christ. I was in my 20s, and I had never heard the good news of Jesus, that he died for my sins. So for me to actually hear that message was just the most remarkable thing, and to know that there was a way out of this dreadful, dreadful situation we'd gotten ourselves into.
And then you go on to study at Bible College.
Yes.
Then you go on to actually work with Prison Fellowship as a children and families worker.
That's right. That's right. God uses all things for good, doesn't he? And often he uses, yes, even as you've been talking about tonight, he uses our painful moments as well, as much as perhaps our most wonderful moments, but he uses our painful moments as well to bring restoration and grace and meaning back into other people's lives.
Yeah. Tell us one story about one of the lives you've seen in your work in Prison Fellowship transformed.
Oh, we at Prison Fellowship, we actually we run camps for kids, and I run mentor programs as well, just connecting Christian people with children in our community who have a parent in prison. Those kids are seven times more likely to go to prison themselves and their peers. And so I empathise with that, because that's my kids as well. And so I know that Jesus is the answer. And when we can see kids that are coming on camp and then going home and asking their parents about Christ, and people who are actually wonderfully receptive, and then getting churches involved and having young kids come on youth camps and youth groups and giving their life to Christ, that, you know, it doesn't get any better than that.
I love it that I know we've got lots of listeners behind bars on Open House.
Wonderful.
What would a quick message to them be?
Nothing's impossible for God. Never give up. Nothing's impossible. Nothing's beyond him. There is no situation or circumstance that you can get yourself into where God's love doesn't touch and where he can't absolutely transform your life.
Okay. Sally Graham, it's been lovely to meet you and inspiring to hear of your story. And the details of your book are up on our Open House Community Facebook page. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Dave.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.